This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Kai Werner from Confluent.
Yeah, hello, Ian. I work as technology evangelist for Confluent, and that's really an exciting role. Most of my focus is talking to customers and defining their architecture. One key focus there is IoT, actually, because I'm based in Germany, so manufacturing, automotive, you can think about the use cases. In addition to that, I also go to a lot of conferences. First, I do talks, but I also take a look at other technologies. For example, then how to combine things like machine learning together with Kafka and Confluent at our customers again. And the third part, I'm also a connection to our Silicon Valley, to headquarters for product management and so on, to sync with them. And that's in the three kind of jobs I do all together, and that's what makes it so exciting.
So you hit a whole bunch of nice little buzzwords there: machine learning, IoT, analytics. For those people who don't know listening to the podcast, can you give them a quick idea what Kafka is and where it came from?
Kafka was founded or created around 10 years ago at LinkedIn, and the main idea was to do a high volume throughput because there was no existing technology which could do that, and that's why they created it at LinkedIn. So that was the main idea. But after that, Kafka was used for many other use cases, and that's the funny thing what we see today, where our customers do not have one project but many projects, and a lot of them come from IoT space. And I think that what we will cover in more detail, also a few customer examples maybe, and that's the main idea behind Kafka. Around 4 years ago, Confluent was created by the founders or creators of Apache Kafka, and they were built in the end or created to make Kafka enterprise ready, because we hear all the use cases about Netflix and LinkedIn at the tech companies, but then when you go to the banks or telcos or automotive, they have different challenges and requirements like security and other things and tooling, and that's in the end where Confluent helps a lot with these kind of deployments of Kafka in critical use cases.
IoT is a very interesting use case for any form of analytics. We're not just seeing small amounts of data, we're seeing vast volumes of data. One of the problems for companies is they're trying to pull all that data to the middle, to these big IoT data lakes. It creates significant issues on the network, it creates significant issues with doing real-time analytics. When you're talking to customers, how many of them are now looking for a distributed analytics solution that they can push out towards the edge to do pre-analytics before it gets to the core?
Actually, we see all the different scenarios. That's also one of the crazy things about Kafka, because you can do it in so many different ways and there's always trade-offs. Maybe first the use case you just explained. For example, Audi has a builder connected car infrastructure, and they are really ingesting all the data into the cloud to analyze it there. So they aggregate the data and build their models there. So that's one good example. But on the other side, we see more and more use cases where really do more processing at the edge. At the edge does not necessarily always mean the device like a car, for example, but maybe some more local data center or something like this. And that's the things we see more and more because of the advantages you just explained. However, what's also important to understand is that you can also do a mix of both. For example, you can do model training in the cloud and leverage all the features like elastic scalability, pay as you go, but then deploy the model at the edge. And that's where we've seen more and more use cases, for example, in manufacturing for doing predictive maintenance in real time. And that's really how you can combine that depending on what your use case is, more big data in the cloud or more local streaming at the edge. And you can mix that however you want to do that.
The shift between delayed analytics and real-time analytics has been driven by people wanting to do predictive analytics as probably the biggest of the use cases in that sense. When we start to look at manufacturing, it's an industry that's inherently conservative. It doesn't like change. It certainly doesn't like risk. The last thing it needs is a machine down, because that means it's losing money. When you've been talking to customers and taking Kafka on site, how many of them understand really what real time will give them? And how many of them understand what they really want from real time analytics?
We really highly recommend to define the business case first so that you really know what to do. Don't just do a technical proof of concept or so, but really solve a business problem. Real time is always a definition. Sometimes it's milliseconds, sometimes it's a second. That's what you have to define first. But the point is that these guys really often have the idea what they want to do, and then they start with a proof of concept or pilot before they scale it out. So typically in manufacturing, you start in just one factory and do a first pilot and then use it in many different assembly lines. And only when that's running after maybe 2-3 years, then you go to the other factories and do the same. Actually, in manufacturing, because it's so much data and so much scale, even if you, for example, improve cost by just 1%, you save millions already. And therefore, our customers find the use cases for that. That's actually not the hard part. The hard part is to understand really well what is Kafka, where can it help, and how can you deploy that at scale. Also, that's the important thing, what we mostly do at Confluent for really 24/7 mission-critical deployments. And that's where we work with our customers on.
In those manufacturing environments, we're seeing more and more equipment vendors embedding hundreds of IoT sensors inside their machines to do digital twins back in their own computing environment. But they have a different need for that data. What nobody wants is the same data coming off the machine twice. and therefore flooding the network for no reason. So are you seeing the customer drive your engagement, or is there also a drive from those vendors?
Everybody's driving it because all have the same idea. They want to get a control over the data and use it to add values for that. So that means that, for example, the automotive vendors want to use it for digital service, but also the vendors of the parts want to use it. All of them are driving it, and sometimes even they are in competition now with that. We see both sides where, of course, the customer does the project in the end in its factories. But on the other side, we're also working more and more with vendors of parts which work to us, and they more or less use an OEM style where they embed then these technologies into their products and just offer it as a service to the final end user of that. So it's really both of them want to do it and do it, and then who wins where it makes more sense, that what they have to find out in the end. That's the good thing, that's not our problem. We just help both of them if they want.
Kafka's an event-driven model. It doesn't naturally just throw things into a database, it creates an event stream. When you talk architecture to people, when you talk about designing their analytics around Kafka, do they understand the separation point between a database-driven and an event-driven model?
In the beginning, most don't. So that's really hard because it's a completely new concept of doing things event-driven. What Neha explains in every keynote, for example, also that we have to explain it to our customers, educate them about the advantages, but also about the differences from event-based programming and all the advantages. Many of them don't understand in the beginning, and many think about, hey, let's build the data first, some in the big cloud all together, and then use it. On the other way, what we see more and more, that it doesn't always make sense, and therefore you filter it in the streaming way and then only use the data you need. And however, even that is merging more and more. So for example, actually right now I'm building an example where you can ingest data in a streaming way into TensorFlow, so one machine learning framework. In the past, you always had to use a database for that, like a data lake or something like S3 in AWS. Today, TensorFlow has an interface that you can streaming and ingest the data directly without a database into a machine learning framework. And this way also, analytics or machine learning and Kafka, they are merging more and more together, which is great, because you don't need a database for that anymore in many use cases. Like for all the other things about Kafka, it's always different options and you have to choose the right one. We see all of that. We see customers which only build a data lake, train their model there, but we also see the other use case. So for example, in healthcare for IoT, where really you can do everything in this hospital by themselves and do the real-time analytics there, and maybe only send all the outputs to a central layer in the cloud. So let's say you have 10 hospitals, you do all the calculations locally, and then you also send the insights to one central aggregation cloud cluster, where you then do the further processing or analytics.
How would you do that in a hospital? Let's look at latency, because latency is always our big challenge here. If I think about an ICU ward, I want immediate response. Whereas if I'm on a general orthopedic ward, I've not got people likely to die on me. So my speed of processing, the amount of data I gather, is going to be very different. Do hospitals become hubs of distributed Kafka instances? So maybe a server sitting in ICU taking data from all those machines, all those patients, and making real-time decisions for the clinicians to act upon compared to the rest of the hospital? Or do they tend to be just one server hub in the hospital and require, therefore, a rethink of the network and the network flow?
In these kind of scenarios, as soon as it's really getting mission critical, which means in this case in hospital it could take lives or whatever, latency is very important, and therefore in these use cases you would definitely deploy one Kafka cluster in one hospital. So each hospital has its own Kafka cluster which runs there, because then you have the high availability, the zero data loss, and even more important, the immediate reaction. So when you analyze all the data in real time with analytics, it could be with machine learning, but even if it's just rules decisions or whatever, but it is real time, and therefore within milliseconds you can also make a decision and send an alert to the doctor to come there. And in these use cases, it's all central, because all the network issues which could be there if you're remote are removed from that. That's definitely then the pattern which you go. In addition to that, however, in addition to the mission critical cluster in every hospital, you could have one big aggregation cluster somewhere in the cloud, for example, which gets all the information to analyze it more. But that's not the really critical stuff then. And that's how you can also separate. And that's what we see also more and more. It's not just in IoT, but in general, where you really have critical clusters, and then you have other ones for analytics, which are not that critical. And therefore, you can operate them independently, and also then you can put your focus differently on that regarding tooling, SLAs, and whatever you need behind that.
You've mentioned Edge before, and the idea, of course, having a cluster in a hospital and then a health authority with a larger cluster aggregating those hospitals in is a good example of Edge. It's one data center to many data centers. But to most people, edge computing is much more further downstream. It's about looking at what other compute capability we have, the millions, billions of devices that are now sitting out there. Many of them use very little of that compute capacity. How far downstream are you seeing customers begin to look in terms of doing edge-style computing? And how are they enumerating the devices to make sure the devices they use are capable of delivering this without impacting the device?
We also see that actually more and more because, of course, it's a lot of advantage if you can do the things at the real edge, like a smaller device. And therefore, of course, from a Kafka perspective, someone has to understand Kafka typically is a distributed system. So it's always a cluster of different brokers. So it doesn't make sense to install something like a Kafka cluster on a mobile phone, of course, or even in a car. However, having said that, what we see more and more is that people have the Kafka client at the edge, because then you can still do some processing there. And there is different design concepts, for example, like transfer learning, where you do building a first model somewhere at a bigger data center, but then you can run it on the mobile client, which is smaller, and you only do the final calculations there at the edge. And that's also happening more and more. And with that, we see often this IoT integration, no matter if it's a car or if it's a mobile device, from this kind of edge where there is some compute and processing. And then you communicate to other clusters or servers depending on how much you want to do and how you want to share the information. So it's typically a mix of doing some part on the mobile app or edge, what's possible there. And everything else, of course, has to be outsourced to a bigger data center.
How many of those customers are using that to reduce noise? We know that in any stream of data, history tells us that we have a small amount that's real data and the rest of it we don't really need. Yeah. But we waste all of that electricity, all of that bandwidth, all of that effort sucking it in to assess it. Are customers seeing the idea of Kafka clients at the edge as their first opportunity to reduce noise?
That really depends on the use case. Sometimes it's even before that. So that's what you mentioned also about hardware manufacturers. When they create new parts, often they do really the filtering already as part of the hardware. So it's before you write code on top of that. It's really in the microcontroller or whatever where they already filter out things. That's the first option. Then the second option is really the Kafka client where you can do that. That's perfect in the meantime because it's pretty easy to do streaming analytics or stream processing at the edge with things like Kafka Streams or KSQL. The huge advantage of that is it's still just a client. So you don't have a big data cluster, you just have a client and can filter while the stream is created. And before you send it to the Kafka broker, you already filter it at the edge. So that's a very common use case and pretty simple to do. The third part, of course, is send everything to the brokers and filter it there. And that really depends on the use case, because sometimes even if you think about not everything is important, often you only don't know that it might be interesting later. And that depends a little bit. For real sensor data, you often filter it at the edge. But for all other data, for example, healthcare or user data, you typically send the full raw data to the core cluster and process it there.
I was sitting in the Kafka and Druid presentation earlier. They were talking about router data. An area that I spend a lot of time in is cybersecurity. It's also an area where we struggle with analytics. It's where we brought in a lot of machine learning and augmented intelligence systems. But it's the volume of data that is causing a lot of problem for these people to consume. You talked earlier about using Kafka to feed TensorFlow. Druid, of course, enables people to capture even larger sets of data, and that's particularly why the telcos are using it. How much interest have you seen from security companies? Because if I'm honest, Kafka is not being talked about by the IBMs, the NTT Securities, the Symantecs, all the big security companies I spend time with.
The funny thing there is, of course, you don't talk about that if you have another product to sell, which could do that maybe. What we see more and more in security is a really a hot topic, because what's a big problem of existing products, most of them exist for 5, 10 or more years, they don't scale for this big data set anymore. And therefore, there is two different scenarios which we see a lot. The first one is existing solutions can't process that much data. They put Kafka in front of that to filter the data out and only send parts of that to the existing information system. The other reason for that is also to save costs. If you have something like a log analyzing system where you pay per gigabyte, that can get very expensive, and therefore they simply use Kafka in front to filter the data to send it there. So that's the one common use case we see a lot. And the other use case where some customers simply think this doesn't make any sense because the other system doesn't scale anymore and it's not our future. Instead of doing this kind of scenario, they replace the existing system with a Kafka solution. So what we see today is many customers which build security systems built on Kafka infrastructure because they know that scales well, it's open, it's independent, you can work with a vendor like Confluent, but you don't have to if you don't want to. And that's the huge advantage is why Kafka gets so much adoption compared to a specific product by a specific vendor. Even if you go now with Confluent, you can go away from it later if you want it.
Confluent's in that same space as we're seeing with a lot of companies now where open source is concerned. They're providing that enterprise roadmap, as you talked about earlier, where companies want to know that the product is secure, that there's a roadmap to the product, that if they need support, they can get some skills in-house. When you're talking to customers, how many of them have started with the raw open source version and then come to you? So they've maybe made mistakes, they've run into brick walls. And how many of them are just simply saying, we want to go open source, but actually we want some safety net around open source?
I'm now with Confluent over 2 years, and I have seen all the different scenarios. What we have is called a maturity curve, where we say number one is the developer just downloads it and tries out the open source version. Number two, he builds a pilot. Number three, he goes to production. And then he goes to larger scale until global streaming like LinkedIn or Netflix. We have seen them on many different phases where they came to us. It's better the sooner it's possible to go to an expert to let you explain how it works well and how to configure it. Because even in this last 15 minutes or so, we talked about so many different use cases. And depending on the use case, you have to configure differently for different scale, SLA, zero data loss. We recommend to start with us as early as possible, at least to do something like an architecture review to explain you, is this architecture right for your use case? However, we have seen customers which tried it out by themselves, and even they have been in production for a year, and then after a year, they were down. They had downtime and outage, and in a 24/7 deployment, it's not good. And then we had signed a contract more or less from Friday to Monday because they had to get running again. Therefore, that really depends a little bit on the scenario and the SLAs. However, what we really see a trend more and more, and I think that's what Neha's keynote was talking about, if it's not in a data center or at the edge, but really the processing in the cloud, then we see more and more customers which say from the beginning, we want to focus on the business problem. We don't want to run a distributed system like Kafka, so we buy and pay as you go, more or less. And that's the huge advantage, because as the Kafka experts, we can provide the SLAs for uptime, for throughput, and so on. And as you heard today from Neha, maybe even things like pay as you go, where you just use consumption-based pricing and elastic scale. That's huge, and that's what we see more and more the trend, especially if people go to the cloud anyway.
You mentioned two words there, architecture and cloud. Far too many people think they just lift and shift, throw it into the cloud, and it'll run faster and it'll scale. It doesn't. How much of your challenge when you start to talk to people about their existing analytics solution and then moving from that to real time with Kafka in the cloud is about teaching them architecture and explaining to them how things have to change, rather than just saying, okay, yes, you've made this run, this nice little pilot project over here. Now we'll just scale it to a million machines.
That's not working, actually. That's right. First of all, I have to say, we also see many customers which simply run Kafka for a few years already and want to go to the managed Confluent Cloud. And therefore, it's easier then, because they are already at scale, but they don't want to manage it by themselves with the issue. So that's the easier one. If they really start from small, we also help them from the beginning to do it the right way. In the meantime, we also don't have to explain many customers, but the big bang doesn't work. Plan accordingly. And even if you can buy the service as you go with a specific throughput and start with 1 megabyte and go to 1 gigabyte per second, even in that thing, we have this maturity model to explain them how to bring on the use cases step by step. Let's go back to manufacturing from the beginning. Our customers start with one specific assembly line, for example, and they try it out with that. And when that works, they scale it up to 10 assembly lines and then to one full factory and then step by step. That's the same what Audi is doing. They have built their connected car infrastructure in the last 3 or 4 years and they are in production, but that's still not the global world already. And now they are moving up and bringing that to all the global countries. And that's how it works well. It's not just about scaling the Kafka part, but it's scaling the whole infrastructure and also the organization for that. And that's where we also help them with our experts to do the whole story and not just the technology.
So I'm a manufacturing company and I come to you and I say, I've heard the buzzword Kafka. Okay. I've been told by my IT team, we should be using Kafka. Yeah. What three things must I deal with before we start?
The very first thing is to think about what do you want to do. That's really go for a use case. It's not just about a technical proof of concept. We have seen many people many years ago try to build a data lake, ingest all the data. They did it. It was successful. Of course it was, because it Hadoop scales at Google or whatever. There was no added value, and then it's there, but they don't use it. So the use case is really the first thing. The second thing, in my opinion, is really think from the beginning about the criticality. Is this a nice-to-have project? Will it be critical? Will it be global scale at the end when you reach it? And so one of our first questions when we go to a new customer is, what happens if your Kafka cluster is down for 1 hour? And then depending on that answer, we know how to go on and how critical the project is, how we want to plan with them. The third part then, of course, is who will operate that Kafka cluster. That's what's important. We have seen customers, not more anymore today because we explained them early enough, but which have set it up by themselves. After it was running more or less, they decided, well, now we can go to Confluent Cloud. And that doesn't make sense if you know you don't want to host it by yourself. Spend your resources which you have on other things, on building the applications only. And that's, I would say, the three things which you should think about before starting a bigger project or initiative.
Brilliant. Kai, thank you for your time.
You're welcome. It was great.